Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, September the 22nd, and welcome to our commentary. I didn't have a chance in yesterday's video to talk about President Biden at the UN, so I'm just going to briefly touch on that today. I mean, look, these speeches are never that significant. I mean, it's a very routine speech, and most of the time the president just goes through a bunch of basically a bunch of things that are very general and doesn't say anything. The one criticism that I have of the president's speech is that when he talks about climate change, and I understand climate change is a big issue for many people in that room. If you talk about climate change, but you don't call on China and India to play correctly, in other words, China and India are basically operating on their own rules when it comes to the climate. They don't care. They're pumping as much as they can. They're building as many coal plants as they want. They're not, you know, the Paris Climate Change Accord doesn't apply to them, in other words, which is why it's such an irrelevant executive agreement that the president signed. Remember, the Paris Climate Change Accord is not a treaty. Therefore, it's not really enforceable against the United States because it was never approved as a treaty. But back to the speech. Most of these speeches are generally pretty lame. And within 20 minutes, everybody forgot what the president said because he usually doesn't say much. There's only two speeches here recently where I thought the president was pretty imposing in what he said. The first one is George W. Bush, 2002 or 2003, when he went through a list, enumerated all of the resolutions that Saddam Hussein, all the UN resolutions that Saddam Hussein was violating, almost like saying to the UN folks, if you're going to write resolutions, but you're not going to enforce them, you're wasting your time. So I thought that was very effective. And the other one was a couple of years ago when President Trump was at the UN and he was criticizing Germany's energy policy, saying that they were going to someday they were going to have to pay the price for their dependence on Soviet or Russian energy. That turned out to be prophetic. So those are the only two times that I really remember a president saying anything worthwhile. Yesterday's speech was pretty routine. And as I said, it was over before it was over. The one thing I will say is that President Biden does not look, when you look at the image on TV, he does not look very strong. And our enemies see stuff like that. Our enemies pick up on stuff like that. And that is something to consider. So overall, I would give it a passing grade. How significant? Very insignificant altogether. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the news here back home. Governor Abbott of Texas wrote an executive order yesterday declaring that the Mexican cartels were terrorist groups and would be treated as such. Now, in reality, as a governor, he doesn't really have the full authority to do that. He can call them terrorists, and he can do something once they come into the country. But as governor, he's very limited. So that's why he's calling on President Biden to do the same thing and to declare them as terrorists and organization. Now, the basis of Governor Abbott's position here is that that these cartels are bringing into the country very lethal drugs, drugs that are killing hundreds of young people. So, and that's where he's really coming from. And he's got a very good point. He's got a very good point on that. But in terms of effectiveness as a governor, there's not much you can do until they come into Texas. Now, once they're in Texas, yes, you can deal with them, but that's quite another matter. If you want to make this very effective, you have to make it at the presidential level so that it then becomes the national security policy of the United States. And once that happens, then the ball game changes because now the president of the United States has the ability and the authority to go directly at the cartel leaders in much the same way that we do with terrorist groups and leaders in Afghanistan. You remember that fellow who was out in his balcony enjoying the beautiful day, and next thing you know, there was a missile that eliminated him. That's the kind of thing that would happen if you would declare these cartels terrorist organizations. It's not going to happen because the Biden administration is not going to do that. But that's the reality. So, but I certainly understand it from the governor's perspective, because you look at the damage that these drugs are doing to young people, and it's pretty dramatic. You know, one of the things that there's a great editorial today in the Dallas Morning News talking about, sending migrants to different cities and all of that. And, you know, the editorial recognizes that obviously it's more symbolic, and it's not really going to change anything, because, again, the governor of Texas or the governor of Florida is limited with respect to immigration policy. But I thought the last line of the editorial was very effective. And the last line of the editorial, let me paraphrase it for you. It basically said, if the Democrats do not want to see that there's a border crisis, if they want to continue denying that there's a border crisis, they're going to find out in November that the public thinks, the voters do believe that there's a crisis on the border. And I think that's the most effective consequence of Governor DeSantis and Governor Abbott doing this, flying these people to different cities and so on, is to create a news story. I mean, the fact is that this is what the country's talking about. You know, Governor DeSantis, by flying the migrants to Martha's Vineyard and then the buses going here and going there, it has forced the American news media and the Democrats to talk about this, and especially Democrats running for reelection in border states or in general, because this crisis is now becoming a national crisis, not just a Texas crisis. So I think in that respect, the move was very effective. Now, I understand he's getting sued, or they're suing the governor of Florida. From what I understand from people who know a heck of a lot more about this than I do, the lawsuit is not going to go anywhere. But, you know, somebody donated, I guess, a lot of money to the lawyers to do this, and they're going to go through the motions. But at the end of the day, it's not going to matter at all. But again, going back to the Dallas Morning News editorial, the Biden administration has allowed this to happen. Okay, this is not happening by coincidence. This is happening because the Biden administration removed some of the policies on the border that were actually working. And in doing so, it opened the door. And that's why we're dealing with this problem here, there, and everywhere. And Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis and the governor of Arizona, they're simply saying, look, let me give you a taste of what we're going through every single day. And any small town in South Texas can tell you just how difficult this problem is. Well, up in New York, the attorney general of that state has decided to sue Donald Trump and I guess his company. And this has to do with fraud and all of that. It's a civil case. And again, it's just politically motivated. There's nothing there. I guess they're suing Trump or the organization because they got some loans from some banks and they reported to the banks fraudulent information. In other words, the balance sheet, if you will, the Trump organization balance sheet inflated the values of the assets, and they took it to the banks, and based on that inflation of the assets, the banks lent them the money. There's two problems. Number one, all of the loans were repaid, so none of these loans ever had to be foreclosed. And the second problem is that's not how banks work. If you go to a bank, I don't care who you are, and you go to a bank and you say, I want to borrow money for this reason or that reason, and here's my balance sheet, here's my income statement, here's my information, the bank is going to say, okay, thank you for that information, but you know, we do an independent inquiry. We're going to do an independent study of your financial situation, and we'll let you know. We'll let you know as soon as possible whether or not we're going to make the loan or not. So it's not something that the banks do not rely on the information that the customer is providing. They may use that information, I don't deny it, but that's not how they make their final decision. They have their own inquiry, they have their own people, and if you're talking about property, they're going to use their own evaluators who are going to go out and evaluate the property for the benefit of the bank. So this whole lawsuit is just nonsense. And especially coming from this attorney general who literally ran for office saying, we're going to get Trump. That's our objective. We're going to get Trump. Well, you know what? You should worry about the crime in your state. You should worry about the financial collapse of your state. People are leaving New York in huge numbers, costing the state billions of dollars. Why don't they worry about that? Or the crime in New York City, why don't they worry about that? Because that's what people in New York are worried about. They're not afraid of Trump or his company. They're afraid of the crime and the taxes and the quality of life driving people away from the state of New York. So again, I wish that the Supreme Court would stop all of this and simply say, you know, stop investigating this man. You know, at some point you got to stop investigating him and you got to start governing and resolving the issues in New York and in other places where the Democrats continue to be obsessed with Donald Trump. Oh, a couple of things on this day in history. We're going to remember Tommy Lasorda, who was born on this day in 1927. He passed away in 2021, not long ago. Tommy Lasorda, of course, was the manager of the LA Dodgers. They won a couple of World Series along the way. They were just a Tommy Lasorda was one of the greatest ambassadors for the game of baseball whoever lived. I mean, the guy was just like, if you wanted somebody to represent or to make the face of baseball, Tommy Lasorda was the guy. Great personality, great energy. He was just a great guy, and he represented the game extremely well. He managed the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers were the only organization that he ever played for. He played for them and then became a coach, a third base coach, and eventually the manager of the LA Dodgers, where he won the World Series in 1981 and in 1988. He played a couple of other times in the World Series, he managed the Dodgers to several more World Series, but they lost those, but they did win in 81 and in 89. And something very sad happened on this day in 1993, and I remember listening to it on the radio. Nolan Ryan pitched his last game, but it wasn't just his last game. It's the way it ended. Ryan was starting in Seattle, and then all of a sudden he felt a pain in the shoulder. They took him out of the game, and that was the last time he ever pitched. He injured his shoulder, and that was the end of his career. Now, he was going to end that year anyway. He was going to retire at the end of the year, but the way it happened, he didn't have a chance to, let's say, pitch the last game here in Texas. So I remember listening to it on the radio, what a sad moment that was to hear that Nolan Ryan was coming out of the game and then later on find out that he had literally a career-ending injury. He did something to his shoulder, and that was the end of Nolan Ryan. What an amazing career. What a tragic way to end it on this day in 1993. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.